First of all, just to let you know from last time, we're going to avoid this kind of awkward presentation to you. We have a number of staff who will have presentations. The idea of standing up, looking for other people to support what someone at the stand is saying, sitting down, all that, we'll just avoid that. We'll be here, group situation with my staff. There'll be several members giving presentations. If you have questions, it could be anyone who answers the question. Virginia Institute of Marine Science is here as well. Tonight, Lynn Haney could not join us. She is the chair of the Crab Management Advisory Committee. Jimmy Dean Close, as the vice chair, has taken the reins, and he will be the chair tonight. We'll help him out. Jimmy Dean has some information that we tried to share with him, and so please help Jimmy Dean out. He can certainly run the meeting, but just keep in mind that we try and keep it so that we get you out of here, really.
He'll do all right.
Get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's our motto here. So with that, those are the announcements. I haven't heard from anyone other than Tom Powers is on the phone. Is that
and
right?
Dan Dyes is on
and
the phone.
And Dan Dyes is on the phone. Good evening. And I haven't heard from any other members that they wouldn't be here, but you do have a quorum. So keep that in mind. Thanks a lot.
All right. We have approval of the minutes for February.
And also October.
And October.
Yeah, I apologize. But just we'll hand those back out. We had them out in February. And I apologize to you, the folks on the phone. I don't think we said.
I think we got
it. Got it.
We got
mail.
February and October?
No, this is February.
Yeah. So here's October again. We did pass these out in February, but we didn't have a quorum, so they need to be voted on.
No quorum.
Tom, I know you've had a chance to see these in February, but Ben, I apologize for not sending the October minutes.
I
Mr. Chairman, you ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Make a motion that we accept both February and October.
All right. Minutes approved. Yeah, you got a second? Yeah. All right. Approved the minutes for the October meeting. Take a vote.
Take a vote.
All in favor?
Yeah.
Right. Minutes for the February meeting.
Voting or?
Yeah, vote.
Yeah.
All right. All in favor?
All right.
February meeting's done.
You're good. Mr. Chairman, what we're going to do next is Joe Grist will provide the information on the 2013-2014 Baywide Winter Dredge Survey, and then I'm sure there's going to be some questions. Following that, you had some information at your February meeting about the performance of the fisheries through 2013, but it wasn't complete. So staff will present that after your discussion on the dredge issue, and then get you some additional information to look at. So just to let you know how that's going to go. After that, on your agenda, by that time, we will be at item 4, which is management measures. And I would expect that's going to be a pretty lengthy discussion as well. So that's the situation from staff.
All right, it's April. April and May is when we usually have this discussion about the winter dredge survey results. And the table that we normally show you is table 1. I'll point out a few key points to this table, and then we'll get into the actual figures that come from the table. I highlighted in red some key numbers. So in the middle column, number of spawning age female crabs in millions. We've been in depleted statuses 4 times with this fishery since 1990, based on the winter dredge survey. The most recent being now. The last 3 prior were 1999, 2001, and 2002. And then we've gone through this period in the 2000s and since the management framework of 2008, and now we're here at this depleted status again in 2014. A lot of times you hear this status called overfish, but that's a connotation, well, that means you just took a bunch of crabs out and caused this. But this is, there's more to it than just fishing. There's environmental, there's predation, there's sea, loss of seagrasses. There's a lot of factors tied to this. So the CVSAC preliminary group, and also us, we're saying really this is more of a depleted status than what we would call a traditional overfish status. On the far column, the percentage of female crabs harvested, and this is your female exploitation fraction. This is how we basically give you the information if we're overfishing or not. Of course, this is female-based since the 2011 stock assessment. And you can see for the last 6 years, we have not been in an overfishing status. Overfishing would be an exploitation fraction greater than 34%. Our target is 25.5%, and you can see we've actually been below our target for the last 6 years. The last time we were in overfishing status under this control rule was in 2007.
Let me comment on this slide for everyone. So with the spawning age crabs, back in 1999, 2001, and 2002, first of all, we weren't using anything to know that we had that amount of abundance, that low amount of abundance. You know, the science didn't develop really to guide us a little bit in 2001, but by the 2005 assessment, that's when we started to realize something about the limits for fishing and the limits for abundance. So no one really knew back then. In 2011, the recent assessment came out. That's been, information's been provided to you. And it was also the first time that it's strictly female spawning age crabs. So really, 2012 was the first time that was employed by all the jurisdictions. And here we are in 2014, and we find that the $70 million, which is supposed to be the lower limit, it's a little bit lower than that. The second thing I want to point out to you is, yes, we are in an exploitation rate that is less than even the target. It's certainly less than what's called the threshold or the overfishing limit. But look where we are on the harvest bay-wide, 37 million pounds. In the 80s and even in the part of the 90s and definitely the 70s and 60s, 37 million was a Virginia harvest. And a lot of times it was more than that. So, you know, you have to put this table in perspective as you look at it. And, you know, it has all the information you need to try and figure out what the next step should be, what, you know, what was going on in the past. But the one thing which I've mentioned to you before, on the exploitation fraction, there's nothing, there's no dead discards in there at all. It assumes that every gear fishery is completely clean, and the catch is treated really just as the harvest. So there's an underestimate there. The other thing that you point out, and so I'll reiterate what you say, we do not think that the reporting systems in the bay are completely accurate. I'll just leave it at that. So if there's under-reporting or over-reporting, that has a bearing on that part as well. The only thing we know to hold on to for right now, with a low harvest and below the lower limit of removals, is that we have to look at these abundances. And we've been doing a lot of that, and I'm sure you will as well. We encourage that, but certainly there's some interplay there with the juveniles and the spawning age. Typically what has happened is since 2008, with the 34% reduction in females bay-wide, all the jurisdiction focus is on the spawning age females. So here it is, March of 2014. The winter, I'm talking about the winter dredge survey, ends March of 2014. We would focus, as we did before, on the spawning age females, unless you think of the juveniles and you look at that column next to the spawning age and you say, well, what about them? Some recruit in August, another bunch recruits in September of this year, a little bit in October. Pretty much they're all fishery size as you get into the fall, late summer, fall. What has anyone done for them? You know, that's got to be an important thing to think about, and that's certainly what you're going to hear from us a little bit later. The reason 2010 was so great was because it was a high harvest. It was a fairly low exploitation rate, even with, if you consider the factors I talked about, underreporting, no dead discards. It still would have been a good year for the amount that was removed, healthy. And then you look at the abundance in 2010, you've got 663 million crabs, but what's more important, you have the highest amount of spawning age females coupled with a really good amount of juveniles, not the highest ever, but you've got a good combination there. And probably with that many juveniles, 340, which is fairly substantial, that one year, it may not have mattered that we didn't do anything about the juvenile crabs. But in general, if you start looking at all this data, we started saying to ourselves, well, why are we just focusing on the female crabs, the ones that will spawn in either late May of this year, for example, or July, August? So you get these low numbers of female spawning age crabs, like in 2012. You're starting off in March. You've got 95 million, which was pretty low. Everyone remembers that. And then in 2012, we had an outstanding harvest-wise in March of about 2.6 million pounds. The effort doubled, everything else like that. Is there any expectation that the juveniles in 2013, which were the second lowest at 111 million, should have been higher with that type of situation, with no checks really on the juveniles or on the spawning age females from before? So I think it's important for all of us to sort of have those conversations tonight. You know, I know that we have gotten a head start, but that doesn't mean you can't catch up. So go ahead.
So following from the table or some of the figures based on the table results. So again, on the what we're calling depleted, which, you know, has been called the overfished status, but this we're noting as more of a depleted status for this year. In reference to previous years, our 68.5 million female age one or older crabs, the age one pluses, in comparison to last year was 147. And you can see the variability we've had in the last 5 years. Prior to that, from the about the mid to late 1990s through the early 2000 time period, it was kind of consistently a more lower pattern, a little bit of variability dipping down again into what was called an overfished status to that point. And again, the overfishing control rule, so 23% for the exploitation fraction of females. And again, the last 6 years with that fraction, we have been actually below the target and not even close to the threshold, which is the red line here at 34%. Last time we were there was 2007. And you can see during a time period of the late 90s, early 2000s, we had crossed that line quite frequently under the current control rule. The winter dredge survey also provides abundance estimates for other things such as the total abundance, male abundance, juvenile abundance. So our total abundance from 2013 to 2014 for comparison hasn't changed by much. 300 million crabs in 2013, 308 million in 2014. So the variability in the number is actually within your juvenile females. You're dropping your females and you're increasing your juveniles. But the total abundance is about where it was last year. And you see, again, the variability we've seen in prior years leading up to this, and even in years up to leading through the 2000 time period and even the 90s, a lot more variability showing there, not so much a flat line as we just seen. Abundance of juveniles, which is the other key. This is our spawners for 2015. So we've seen some a lot of variability in the last couple of years, some peaks such as in 2012, the 541 million abundance. And last year we were at 97 million. We were at 111 million for last year and up to about 199 million for this year. Male crabs, this is a interesting thing to have to discuss because we are in a female-based management framework. But the male crabs, we haven't seen the same response there in the last couple of years as we have with the females. Over time, since, let's say, 2004, slight trend upward up until about 2012, but in the last 2 years, definitely more of a downward trend. Overall, we haven't seen any of the peak abundances in male crabs that were seen in the early years of the winter dredge survey, the 91 or the 93 peak. Even with 2003, there was a bit of a peak there, but we haven't seen that since. Male abundance is, of course, very important. We've had presentations in front of CMAQ before about sperm limitations. We know that, you know, we're more of a predominantly female-centric fishery here with some male harvest, whereas Maryland's more of a male-dominant fishery. So this is still something of very much interest to everybody, CBSAC and the jurisdictions, not seeing these male abundance come up. Comparison of harvest between Maryland and Virginia and PRFC since 1994 and the averages. So Maryland is in blue with the flat line being their average, Virginia in red, and Potomac River Fisheries Commission is in green. Again, the Potomac River Fisheries Commission harvest is just from the main stem, whereas the tributaries are recorded for the respective states, Maryland and Virginia. And we can see both Maryland and Virginia overall has been on decline in harvest. This is no new news to the committee in the last 3 years. And PRC even has seen a bit of a downturn, though theirs are more of a flat line over time. But they even have seen a bit of a downturn for 2013.
Well, we're actually pretty excited after 2008 because you can see in Virginia there was a nice increase. I think it was about 35%. Again, not near what we've done over the long term. 2010 up a little bit more. 2011 up a little bit as well. But if you look at the whole graph there, there's certainly a lot of times of low harvest. And we don't think that the idea that we spent 6 years near or under the target removal rate is something that's a great thing, because there's no magic here. You take the harvest, you divide by the average abundance, you come up with the exploitation rate or the removal rate. If you have a low harvest, low abundance, you can have a low removal rate. But wouldn't everyone rather have high harvests, higher harvests, better abundance, and you can still have a target-based removal rate? So, you know, this is not something to hang your hat on, just the fact that the removal rate has been low. The stock is telling you things that are a little more important. The abundance hasn't been there, and there's been a slide in the harvest as well. So, go ahead.
Another depiction of similar information using a bar graph, and the trends since the 1994 time period when mandatory harvest reporting was put in place. And you can see some changes, you know, in distribution. Virginia early on was fairly even with Maryland, very similar harvest levels. A more recent time, Maryland's had a little bit more of a higher harvest level than Virginia. Potomac River just kind of coming along in their small amount. More recent years have been declines in both 2011, 2012, 2013. You can just see a little downturn ever since the 2010 time period. Of course, this is just the harvest and the landings. This is not discard. This is not all the other removals. This is just what is reported. Something we did do was look at the different components in the harvest, the male, the females, and the peelers, and by jurisdiction. And you can see on the female blue crabs, and this is looking back actually all the way back to 1990 data through 2013. And you can see that in females, we are always have known Virginia is the primary female harvest area. And you look in the early 1990s, and it's very clear where our role there is. And then you can see it starting to come down in the late 90s, early 2000s, and then we had the real low point, 07, 08, and then it's been variable the last couple of years. A bit of an upturn, 2010, 2011, then it's ticking down a little bit the last 2 years. Maryland, female harvest, a little higher in the 90s, more constant, not a lot of variability from about 2000, 1998 through 2008, and then a little bit more variable in the last couple of years. But even there, female harvest is down for 2013.
I think we've got the wrong scale on there on the y-axis. I think that's probably off somehow. I don't know. Go back to your harvest where you had it all the jurisdictions together from the CBSEC.
It looks like something's off.
Yeah, something's off.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll have to adjust. The trends
are
okay.
Wait a minute. This is everything.
Okay.
This is just female.
Okay, good.
Okay, so this is just female harvest.
Scared me.
Yeah. Scared me there for a second. Male blue crabs, a little different story here. You know, back in the early 90s, even Virginia had some fairly decent male crab harvest, more so than we see today. Not to the extent of what Maryland had, but definitely a little higher. Then you go, again, same time period, 98, 2008 time period, see ours start truncating down. Maryland's a little bit more variable. And then they have more of the upturn since the framework of 2008. You see a bigger upturn in male harvest for Maryland, a little bit for Virginia, but definitely Maryland had their highest peak in 2010 of male harvest. And then it's been declining since. Now, the 2013 is not their lowest harvest. It definitely looks like our lowest, but it's definitely probably in the bottom five, bottom six for Maryland. And then peeler crabs, we pulled this. This is part of the information we provide to Maryland. Each year we're looking at the exploitation rate. And early in the 90s, if you discount 1992, we're pretty much matching Maryland almost one for one going through there. It's not until about 2005, all of a sudden you see a big decline with the peelers in what's being reported. Especially for Virginia. Maryland still is down, but not as significant as what you see in 05 for Virginia. And it continues that decline to 07. We see a bit of an upturn the last 5 years, except for 2013. Maryland, again, 2010, big peeler harvest, just as with their males. But the last year, 2013, was the lowest for Maryland, and I believe it is the lowest or the second lowest for Virginia since 1990. At that point, we want to stop this presentation.
For questions.
See if we have any questions before we move on to some of the other information staff has.
Mr. Chairman, can you pull that one of those graphs back up?
Sure. Which one would you like, Ty?
That's fine. Explain to me how you're determining, you know, what Maryland and Virginia is doing, comparing on that.
This is based on reporting. It's based on reporting, Maryland reporting, Virginia reporting.
I understand, but my question is you got red, say on 90, red's Maryland, and they've got almost 1.5 million pounds. And then yellow's Virginia, and they're almost up to 2.5 million.
Virginia had, in that year, Virginia had less than a million. They're stacked. So it's not that Virginia had.
So really the yellow should be next to the red.
It can be, but then.
And the blue should be next to the yellow.
If you want to.
But you got them stacked instead of.
All right. We have them stacked.
All right, because that's a little confusing.
Just to show the total.
Yeah, it just gives you the total, but it's. Okay. So you really got to determine the difference in the colors to determine who's more and who's less.
Track the numbers.
All right. I just wanted to verify that.
Okay. Thanks, Ty.
Oh, I got one more question, Mr. Chairman. Is there any reason why we don't have copies of this?
Well, these particular ones are probably about 2 hours old. That's why it threw me for a little bit of a loop. But you can certainly get handouts of this, sure.
It'd be nice to have to review.
Yeah.
All right.
We have been putting this together since yesterday, really the packet. So
we have almost everybody's email. I think we can email you a copy of this, if that would be better. Or you want to walk out with printed copies tonight?
I don't have to have a printed copy tonight, but I would like to get one.
We'll make sure you do, because
email it to me.
You to pour over, especially that table one and other things, see what kind of information you think is important. I mean, that table is something that I put together about 5 years ago. CBSAC used to do the figures, and by the time you were done, you couldn't remember what you saw. So
that's my concern.
I wanted everything in one little table. So look at that table.
By the time you're done, I'm not going to remember what I was looking at.
We'll take care of that.
Sure.
Whose email don't we have that maybe we could get tonight? Joe, do you know?
I'm not sure if we have one for Marshall. Just about everyone up there is on the panel. We have the panel on Chris.
Marshall, would you like us to
I'll
mail
give it to you when I leave.
Oh, Marshall has one. Okay.
Good.
All right, good.
Switch
yes. We listed these numbers as preliminary at this point. Do we expect
Any changes, or is it more just because of the final?
No substantial changes.
Changes.
Is expected at this point. I mean, the biggest preliminary number up there is really with the exploitation fraction. They shift a little bit, not to any worrisome level, because 2013 harvest data is still technically preliminary as we clean it. So that may shift up or down by a point or two, but we're not expecting anything significant on any other number.
Obviously, the adult female number is a lot lower than we, I think everyone on this panel had hoped it would be. Do we?
Everyone in this room.
Room, right. did we see a drop off in females as we went through the survey this winter because of the weather? Did that seem to be a factor?
Cold and they drug over top of them.
Right, all right, that's. Is
there
that?
Was some, there was some higher mortality in Maryland waters, not in Virginia waters, but I would also add that we had a very low juvenile abundance last year, so it's not unexpected that we have low adult abundance this year. Mm-hmm. Probably a combination of variables.
Okay. Move on to the next presentation.
So what Joe just went through with the dredge survey was characterizing Bay-wide. What you're going to see in these next few slides is actually just from Virginia tidal waters. So it kind of characterizes what Virginia is seeing in Virginia waters rather than across the entire bay. What you're seeing right here in figure one is the harvest of blue crabs in Virginia tidal waters. You can see that we harvest a lot more females than we do males. We also, in our reporting, have this small spot down here of unclassified crabs. What we can do with staff is we can parse out males and females in that unclassified using a ratio from that particular year, from that in particular month, to try and get an estimate of male and female harvest. So this next one, this is harvest in crab pots only. You can see that we, as Virginia, harvest a lot more females than we do males, and you can see that downturn steadily since around 2010, 2011. Females, almost double harvest of males in most years. And we did this, this is for crab pots only. Went through and did that same iteration to try and characterize that pewter pot fishery. So you can see in this next one, we have that group of unclassified. With pewters, what we do is we make an assumption that it's about 50% male and 50% female for those market categories. So again, parsing out that unclassified, it's about the same male and female, but it's a little bit mostly an estimate because of that 50-50 ratio. So that just, again, this is just the peeler pots compared to the crab pots, but you can see the male harvest versus the female harvest in those. Okay.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, back up on that.
How do you come to that conclusion?
Yeah.
Did you talk to some of the peeler potters that harvest?
It's most of the information we get shows that 50-50 peeler split. There's not a ton of peeler harvest. Most of it comes from that hard crab pot. It is a small section of it. But yes, there is some variability within that, so that peeler pot could be off from that male-female ratio.
I think what we really do is we know based on science that the juveniles are about 52% female, 48% male. No one's collecting sex information on peelers on any kind of basis, regular basis. We had to agree to go 50-50 on this number of years ago, essentially. And then there is a little bit of information that Adam's talking about, but Adam also has some information by month that maybe would be helpful. But clearly, if you haven't heard me say this before, This is our number one fishery from the bay. It's a recreational fishery in the bay, a commercial fishery. We don't, in this day and age, have a program that collects sex information in Virginia from crabs, carapace width information, some of the basic information that's needed. We don't do that. We have a fin fish sampling program that many of you are familiar with. We do not have a crab sampling program. So I don't know how that happens. I've been talking about it for a number of years. We do get information from VIMS, and we do get information from the surveys, but, you know, clearly for the commercial fishery, we should have some type of sampling program. I mean,
well, my experience over the years, down in the Mob Jack Bay area and rural part of the bay, I'd say 90% of your hogs are peel crabs and female crabs, and upper part of the bay is probably 50-50. All my life, it's always been more female crabs always than it has male crabs, because it's been more female crabs than male crabs. All my life, is experience of crabbing.
That does make sense.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a way of nature, I guess, in reproducing. It's always been more female. So if you have more females, naturally you're going to harvest more females. I mean,
So we ought to look at that Virginia specific. If you think about the bay as a whole, what you just said, where Maryland is typically 65% males, 35% females, Virginia 70-30, maybe the 50-50 is good on a bay-wide basis, but for Virginia, there ought to be some thinking about that.
Well, I mean, that's the way it's been all my life. Yep, I mean, whether you go up and rule as you know, you're going to have your male. Because male crabs do not mix with female crabs, especially after they become a mature crab. You can set a line of pots, and those pots run full of female crabs. Male crabs are not going in there. They'll eat them up. I mean, all the crabs know that.
The trawl survey data, do you do anything dealers there as far as differentiation at all?
No.
Okay.
That's right. You have an option to eat your pocketbook. Just catch that, and then you don't catch it.
Yeah.
That's right. Just because you're not catching it, I mean, you're not there.
Ready? So at the February meeting, we showed you effort, but it was generalized, and so there was requests by the committee to break it down further. So these two graphs are showing crab pot effort by number of harvest days. And the top one's 2013, and the bottom's 2012. And from there, it's broken up into pot category. So the darker blue, which is the left blue, is the 85 pot category. The red is the 127 pots. Green is 170. Purple's 255. And then the lighter blue is the 425 category. And it's broken down into number of days that their harvest was reported. And then the season length is also on there. So for 2013 and 2012, with the extended seasons, each of those were for 234 days for both male and female. So that's the total number of days that one person could have reported harvest for. So with those, also on the legend, the N equals, that's the number of active licenses for each of those categories. So you can see that the 85 pot category, the 255 pots, and the 425 pots are where most of the active licenses are. And then I've also included 2011 on this chart, but looking at the bar graphs alone, it's kind of hard to tell if there's any differences between the years. So I broke it down into a table. 2011 didn't have season extension, so it was 213 potential days for female harvest and 22 days for male harvest. And in this one, I've included the number of harvesters who did not report any crab harvest that were eligible for a crab harvest. And the major trend you can kind of see there is there was, in 2013, there's more people working 1 to 100 days compared to 2012 and 2011. So even 1 to 25 days, it jumps up 20 people. 26 to 50 days goes from 199 to 212. 51 to 100, 233. That's where you start to get your drop. So people are starting, there's less days worked there.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
What's the difference in the effort in the 2 years? It's hard to see here. I mean, was it more effort in 11, 12, 13? I mean, did the effort increase, decrease, up or down?
Across the board, it's about the same.
Both years are about the same far as effort?
Yeah, they're about the same as far as effort. You just see that your harvest decreased in 2013, but to correlate with that, prices were higher, so people were still trying, still setting their pots.
But the effort was still the same between the 2 years, is that what you're telling me?
Across the board, yes, there's just a lot more people were working less days.
I think what we should do, Marshall, for the
that
commission.
That concerns me. You know, if your harvest is low, I'm concerned. Or is your effort lower than it was the year before?
What has to be done, the way Andy has done this and the way we typically do, is in intervals of days, what really has to be done is to find out of those who worked 1 to 25 days, the 242 in 2011, mm-hmm. How many days is that altogether, really? Right. And then each column, you would do that, and then that could answer your question. But what I would suspect,
the less effort you have, the less harvest you're going to have. More effort you have, more harvest you're going to
have. What I suspect is it's a downward slide from 2011 if we do that. Okay. You know, 2011 was still the best year since 2008, harvest-wise, or rising from 2008. So I would think we're going to find when we do that 2011 there was more effort. And, yes, there was more harvest. But it probably won't be a lot different than you'd expect, I don't think.
No, we have the when we looked at the number of trips since 2010, it went down about 2,000 trips in 2011, a couple thousand trips the next year, a couple thousand trips the next year. But from what was decent years of harvest in 2010 and 2011, we were looking at 55,000 to 56,000 trips were, we had reported to us.
Days, trips, right. Same thing.
In 2013, there was still 47,000 trips or days worked. So there was still quite a bit of effort.
Yeah. That's good, Joe, because the effort goes down, but not as much as you'd expect. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a question.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Do you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
In the slide you show N equals 201 for up to 85 pots. What is N?
That's the number of active licenses in that category.
Okay, so that is anything other than zero?
Yes.
Okay, so I see column 1 to 25 is 120. Column 51 to 100. Oh, wait a minute, that's cool. I'm sorry. Wrong color. Okay, 80 plus.
Okay. One of our better questions, Tom, so you made it easy on us.
Okay.
Come on over here. Who's next?
Oh, I've got one more.
One more. Okay. Sorry.
We also did the same thing for peeler pots. So blue is 2011, red is 2012, and green is 2013. And again, the N number is the number of active licenses. So there wasn't any major trends between the 3 years. But if you do look at the number of eligible peeler pot harvesters versus those that didn't report any harvest, you've got almost 50% of inactivity in that industry.
Which has probably been going on since 2003. Yep. Easily. Okay, you switch with me. That's right.
Saying who's next. Won't be able to hear you.
These graphs represent the blue crab harvest from 2008 through 2013 by gear. The top graph shows all the gears where crab pot is the majority. And I've also put in the percent harvest for the crab pot to show that even though some of the harvest amounts look similar, the like in 2008 and 2013, the percent harvest for that gear is lower in 2008 because of the dredge and the peeler pot being higher. The graph at the bottom is a zoomed-in view of all the other gears, just to give you an idea of where they all are with yearly harvest. The peeler pot has the highest amount, followed by the dredge on years that we have harvest for it, followed by the scrape. This graph represents the blue crab harvest by license category. The 255 pot category has the highest amount of harvest, but that is also directly correlated with the fact that that has the most licensed harvesters in that category, followed by the 425 pot category and then the 85 pot category, with then the peeler pot and 127 are the next.
All right, so one of the other things that we took a look at were prices throughout the year. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of background on the pricing survey itself, where we get this from. It's a quarterly survey that's mailed out to all Virginia seafood licensed buyers. It's completely voluntary. So, of course, we recognize that the responses that we receive may not be an accurate reflection of the dockside value. So we really want to emphasize tonight that the better participation we receive in this survey, the better understanding that we'll have of the economic impact of it. So just to give you an idea of the response rate that we do get for this survey, this is all species, not just crabs, but I will show you what those results are in a few slides. So just looking at the fourth quarter that was sent out for October through December 2013 price data, it was sent out to 248 buyers, 39 were returned with usable data, 11 were returned without data or with unusable data. So that gives us a response rate of about 20%. So as you can see, it's quite low, and that was the best of the year. So looking at the species-specific responses from the surveys that we did receive for 2013, we looked at the crab and the oyster data groups because that's where we received the most responses. As you can see, the total response number in the red is very similar to the response of the crab prices. So you can see that trend follows one another. All right, so looking from 2003 through 2013, these are the average blue crab dockside bushel prices by market category. These are just the yearly averages. You can kind of see for jimmies, peelers, sooks, and number ones how it is across the board. Again, keep in mind that we do have a low response rate for this, so this data is it's a little all over the board, you can see. But I would like to point out that 2008 and 2013, we saw similar harvest, but the prices are different. We did see a spike in the 2013 prices, even though the harvest was very similar to the 2008. And looking more closely, this is the monthly average specifically for the females or the sooks from 2003 through 2013, and you can see just the changes throughout the year. You can see where the peaks are. It looks like for the most part, they're sooner in the season in the earlier part of the year, and then it kind of drops off, tapers off towards the end. So, and that's for the jimmies. The number ones. And then the peelers. So, and once again, I just want to emphasize that the better participation we get from this, the better information we can provide back to you. And if you have any suggestions or ideas on how we can get pricing information or how to encourage participation in this, we'd certainly be open to those. Thank you.
Did you say you just had Virginia buyers?
Yes, sir.
Probably half more than crab.
Well, Maryland.
It's include them.
It's for anybody who has a Virginia seafood buyer's license. even if they aren't located in the state, but if they're buying Virginia seafood.
So it'd be important, I'm not going to be laughing if they can hear me, it'd be important to, at some point when we can, when we have time, to collectively think about a way that we can get better economic data, because really, economic data does play into a lot of decisions that could affect us as a state.
Mr. Chairman.
No matter what it might be.
Yes.
I wonder if the crabber itself could voluntarily give you a price when they do the mandatory reporting. Maybe you should ask that question, if they would just voluntarily give you an overall price of, you know, what the average price was for the week, not for the month, but each week. You know, just ask them if they do it voluntarily. That might help some.
I think that would be amazing.
I mean, you got a lot more people than 148 or 50, whatever it was, as far as bars. Idea.
I'm not sure.
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
You know, the harvester has to mandatory report. I think it's time that the buyer should be doing some reporting. I mean, that's one of the things we keep talking about in the industry panel meeting that we have once a month. And we feel as though it's also a good check and balance. You know, that if he's paying once a week, if he could just send that in, you know, and then we can verify what the harvester's reporting and what the buyer's reporting, and see if the two do match, and it's just accountability, more accountability, plus it would give you the economics that you need. But I think it's something to consider, especially with the electronic harvesting that's been put out for, I mean, the electronic reporting that's been put out now. We think it'd be pretty easy for the processors to do it.
I think it would be good to cross-check. It'd be a good thing to do. We have to make sure we can take Marshall's suggestion and make that work a little bit for harvesters, and then the buyers, I think we would do that too. We would, you know, have to do something that they would not only want to contribute, but they would contribute. So I think it would be more than just phone calls. The other part is Adam had some data that he showed us earlier today that we're, you know, because of the amount of information you're receiving tonight, we held back on it. But the amount of what I call self-marketing, what others call retail, has really changed. And there's sort of a real unknown as far as the economics go, and in some case maybe even the harvest goes. But, you know, if we can get information such as Ken and Marshall are suggesting, we can get an idea about the self-marketer or the retail, whichever you want to call it. But it's sort of surprising how that's climbed quite a bit. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and then maybe ask your you know, some more guidance, I think, because, you know, it's something that you have a better handle on.
The economical impact of blue crab fish in Virginia is very important, especially if you happen to go to Richmond. I mean, you've got this money. This right. Shows what it is, what the impact is. Yes, it is.
So, yeah, I agree.
That's a standard.
Good question.
Yes.
How many seafood buyer's licenses do you all issue in a given year?
Stephanie, how many?
There's somewhere between 300 to 400, because people can also have truck, and they can have multiple truck licenses as well. Okay. That's the place of business.
So it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay. What's up next, there? What do you have next? Management.
Stay there. You're fine.
Okay, so the reason I went into such a
prolonged explanation about the importance of juvenile crabs as well as spawning age crabs and the fact that most of our attention since 2008 and really before then, I mean, we have management measures that started in 1994. From 1994 through 2007, we had 21 different management measures. A lot of you don't like some of those management measures. In fact, some of those I think were sort of tepid, and some had some solid basis. And we even had a regulatory review committee, if you remember, back in 2007 with crab scientists and ecologists from, I guess it was all the way from South Carolina up through Maryland, that met three different times to give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the regulations. And their sweeping decision was that it was tough. It was tough to say which regulations were better than others. But in general, the consensus was that the regulations from 1994 through 2007 forestalled or held off a lower stock condition than currently existed at that time. And you remember at that time, that's right about when we were getting ready the next year to petition the National Marine Fisheries Service along with Maryland for disaster relief, which there was a reward of $15 million, and some of you know very well what programs evolved from that. But still, most of that is involving spawning age females. So this time around, we do have a situation where we are depleted. We are overfished, whichever you want to call it. We have a pretty tough situation in Virginia because we have female-based biological standards or limits, and we have a lot of female crabs. So when we get to the commission in May 27th, for a discussion and a public hearing at the June meeting, which might be the 25th, I'm not sure, the fourth Tuesday in June, we need to have a management plan. I have a feeling some of you think the management plan that you're going to go look at tonight is a problem, and some of you think it's not strict enough, and there's probably different opinions. So that's what you want to tell us. So let me start and say that I say a bay-wide reduction. We did meet with Maryland last week and Potomac River Fisheries Commission. We meet each year since 2008. We met, and there is a conviction that at least for the spawning age females, something has to be done in the summer. Maryland's talking about reducing trip limits. Right now, what we're suggesting is lower bushel limits in the summer. What happens there is that we're a little late because we're going to miss the spring spawn, but a few of those weeks, several of those weeks with lower bushel limits, and you have to tell us what you think are good time periods, we put in July 15th through August 31st, and in fact, your committee has suggested in the past lower summer bushel limits. Conserve some spawning age crabs right there. How many? Don't know. Just know that there's not that many to go around to begin with. The second item is a bay-wide closure, which has existed before, which we have not had here for the last couple of years at all. In fact, we extended the pot season into December the last 2 years. We started out in 2008 with an October 26 closure. We then moved to a November 21st closure. We are at least suggesting, since Maryland is November 10th and PRSC says they will be November 10th as well, that the harvest of female crabs in 2014 should stop right at November 15th in Virginia. What does this do? Well, if you look at the results from the winter dredge survey, the current ones, this does help out a little bit, probably not a lot, when you've got 68.5 million spawning age crabs. How many of those are going to be left over that a closed season will help out? You know, probabilistically, not a whole lot, but some. But the main thing is the juveniles have already recruited by that time. They've already recruited. They're already of a fishable size, and that should help depending on what. Well, the what is what happens in the spring. You know, we're a female harvesting commonwealth in the spring, as you've seen some of the data before. And one thing we're thinking about asking the commission is don't start the season March 17th. You had a great year in 2012, too good, I think, with the amount of effort and everything else involved in the harvest. The spring season of 2007 was the first time we went to March 17th. So we're looking at April 1. Same message. We save some of the spawning potential. If what? If things aren't wide open in the spring, we need to have something in terms of the bushel limits in the spring so that by May, late May, we have some opportunity to get some spawning out of those juvenile crabs from right now that will be recruited by that time, really by late fall, and can move into the spawning. So in the press release that you're going to see in both jurisdictions, it will be called a two-pronged approach to management. Now we get to the weak part of all this, and you know, we know the peeler fishery needs some management. I don't think what's up there to start the fishing season on May 1 is really much of a management situation. You have whenever that full moon's hitting in May, that's when things will be hopping. May's about 55% of the annual harvest, May alone, for peeler crabs. However, peeler pot bushel limits should be something that's explored. But we need a little of your assistance, just like with the pricing, to think about the peeler part of this equation. And I know when times were better, you know, we watched the peeler fishery grow and grow and grow, but the peeler fishery's been on a slide for quite some years overall. And, you know, we don't like to say the waste word too often, but my understanding, I can't quantify it because, you know, we didn't get directly involved with the shedding operations, but there is waste. My other concern, as long as we're being open about it, my other concern has always been, if you're a peeler harvester, what are the chances that you report every crab you harvested as a peeler harvester if you're also the shedder? What do you report? You know, that's a concern as well. So there's a lot, and that affects what I said earlier tonight. We talk about a real rosy removal rate or exploitation rate, but where are the dead discards? Where are they counted in? So this is really something we encourage you to talk to us about tonight. And you have ideas of your own. I understand that. So we're definitely headed. There's no doubt whatsoever that the commission is going to be asked to tighten things up. There is no doubt at all. There is no doubt, just so we know, that there's no basis for staff to suggest to the commission that there be a winter dredge fishery season coming up. Abundance is less than last year. I thought last year there was a decent possibility that even though abundance was low, with the care that was taken to develop a limited scenario for a dredge fishery, that was something that was plausible. This year it's not going to be plausible. I want to tell you that now. So at least from the staff. So that's really what I have to say. I hope we can have some advice.
Any questions?
Oh, boy.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead,
Chairman. The only problem I have with this whole situation is that I serve on a lot of different committees, and then I come here and you throw all this at me. You don't give me an opportunity to think about it or talk to the other watermen.
Good point.
This needs to stop because you put me on the spot when I have to make a comment on something. And
well,
there's other people home that's going to say, no, we like this, we like that. So you're jamming all this in my throat. And
no,
I've said this
no.
Before.
Here's what I understand tonight. Here's what I learned tonight. We have an email address of everyone except for you. Tonight we'll have an email address from you.
The adult for this information.
You are very welcome to send in your comments after tonight. You're not on the spot for tonight. We're just looking for some hopeful suggestions from you about what you think. The other part of this is, Marshall, earlier on, what I mentioned to our staff today and which we're working on is we're trying to get out of this mess. When you say we're throwing this on you, you have to realize it's thrown on us just a few days ago. We're in the same situation. So what we're going to try and do in the Bay, and this has been talked about with Maryland and PRFC, is to change the management framework. Right now, we're kind of at the mercy of the winter dredge survey results in April. It's almost May. And then we're supposed to talk about our fisheries.
So it's a time frame period from the winter survey until it comes.
What we're going to do, at least right now, what everyone's looking at, is to change the management framework from a, say, July 1 to June 30th or August 1 to July 31st time period. That's when you bring in your actions. That will mean that next year, if that goes well, there'll be a few months for you to talk to whoever you want, or a couple months to talk to whoever you want before the commission has to have information. So I appreciate you bringing that up because it's something that's bothersome for everyone, the way we act now.
I do have several comments.
All right.
The Peeler Project you showed a while ago, the participation in that over years have gone down, 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 down. I mean, you just showed me that. So you wanted to establish Peeler Pot bushel limits. That's declined 50% in the last 5 or 6 years. Is that what was showed earlier?
Those who are active has declined by 50%, but not recently. What Andy was showing you, that goes all the way back to at least, I can remember, 2003. We had about 920-plus licenses and 400-plus, 470, something like that, were active. That trend has continued.
So it hasn't changed. It's just
nothing's not changed there.
About the same. The next thing, Bay Wire closure, 2014 fall harvest of female crabs. So you close the harvest of the female crabs in the fall, and then in the spring we catch them.
Yeah. We don't want to. We want to do other
items.
If
you close something in the fall and you open it up in the spring, we're going to catch them. We're not going to catch them in the fall. We'll catch them in the spring.
Well, there is recoupment, the ability for any fishery to get back what it's lost from a closure. But that's why, for the first time, we want to have spring bushel limits that are lower than what you saw for 2014 a few months ago. And that's why, with all the stacking up and the anticipation that paid off in 2012, we want to avoid that. Let's just start in April 1. Shove the recoupment back a little bit more, put in the bushel limits. I'm not saying the first time out of the chute this is going to be exactly where we end up, but if we don't start doing that, we're going to do exactly what you're suggesting. We're going to close in the fall, and spring we're going to just be able to take it.
And I've said it for years. I've been on this board, I don't know, 15, 18 years. April 1st. There's no such thing as crab by the water temperature.
Temperatures, right.
I mean, putting a date on something, that makes no sense. We all go by water temperature. I mean, this year proved that. You know, we could start a certain date. We didn't start because it was too cold. So I've never understood the time. It's always water temperature.
Yeah.
I don't understand the time. You know, it's like having Christmas in July. That don't work.
What would you suggest, first of all, And then second of all, the April one is mainly a way to have another worry, and we recognize that. We do worry that what happens in the oyster fishery has some link to what's happening in the crab fishery and vice versa. So, I mean, that's something to think about.
I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, something has to be done. But for years and years, we did the Band-Aid effect. We just put a Band-Aid on it, and it never healed up. I agree. Something needs to be done. What? I don't know.
Please respond.
But it takes time. We got to think this thing over. We just can't jump on it.
Okay. Please respond.
Oh, Rob, what is it you all want to report at the May meeting and at the June meeting?
At the May meeting, something similar to this management plan. You have to appreciate that we're, along with Marshall and the rest of you, we haven't had a whole lot of time to respond to this survey. So we'll report something like this. We'll request a public hearing. There can be other items for public hearing. That's up to the commission. In June, the public hearing would be held.
Oh. On the 18th, we have our next industry meeting.
I saw Paul's email.
And part of what we've been doing in that is we've been taking the terms of reference that Jack originally gave us, and we've been trying to put them into management measures. Is that week going to be enough after we come back on that Sunday and give to you? Is that going to be enough time to take what the panel says to be used at the May meeting?
The commission, well, I mean, I have been thinking about that a little bit since this morning when I saw the email. I think what John Bull asked Paula, if we can talk about this for a second, was were the items that she was thinking of bringing forward more on the long term, or were they on, the short term?
A lot of it's on short term right now. I mean,
so in that case, the week's fine. Someone from the panel. What I would really like in the future, though, it's the same thing that Marshall is talking about. In the future, we have overlap with the panel and CMAQ. We know that. But in the future, we would like the panel's information to be here, and maybe that can still be part of the time between May 27th and the June meeting that everyone gets to hear it. But your week is fine. You'll want someone to present the information. The commission is, at least the commission in the broad sense, is not a stranger.
Somebody from the panel needs to.
Right, that's right. And the commission has been able to weigh what they want to advertise.
And one other thing, and then I'll stop, but a baywide closure of the 214th fall harvest of female crabs. Why would it have to be of the fall? Why not take a time like in October where you get no money for the female crabs and put that closure at that time? And I mean, when you get $10 or $12 a basket, and then let them have the fall part where they get $35, $40 a basket. I mean, if you're going to give up something, put about it, let them take them out of the water when you don't get much money for it, but don't, leave them in the water when you get good money. I mean, I'm just...
No, the way that I'll address that is in October, you still usually have about 500, 550 harvesters out there. In November, you have about 250.
So let those 200 make money.
So what you're saying about October, we would have to advertise not... broadly, but we would have to advertise so that it could be considered. That's all we would have to do.
Yeah.
Well, again,
Mr. Chairman. I mean, so you're going to stop a couple hundred people from catching them, and then if they live through the winter, we're going to turn loose every Tom, Dick, and Harry to go after those same crabs? I mean, that...
Well, who... I don't know, Ken, but who... Is the fishery about everybody, or are there, you know, rights-based fisheries going on with blue crabs? I mean, I think that's the way I would answer that. It's too difficult for us to say because you didn't get your crabs in November, you're the only ones who get the crabs in April or May. I mean, that's, you know, then you've got So beyond that, you've got all this latent effort that you're seeing tonight and you've seen before. Nothing's keeping those people from jumping in either. Until we get a rights-based fishery, until we have an ITQ, until we have catch shares, however you want to call it, until we have allocation on a bay-wide basis, until we have quotas, I think the answers, those kind of things do happen. Right?
I mean, kind of, but I don't see how that makes sense. How you? Well, I mean, if you're going to save them, then if you're trying to save crabs, I don't see how you're going to save them. I mean, I don't.
We'll save some crabs in October, November, whichever it turns out to be. And then in the spring, instead of having a derby-style crab fishery, you know, we have some kind of limits. Bushel limits. So we're not trying to save. We're not trying to save crabs in that way. We're trying to conserve crabs for spawning.
Now, I understand, and we speak of the derby fishery. What's going to happen when the states below you and stuff don't, and you're on a small limit, and they're trucking them up the road? That it doesn't make a difference. Then it's no point in even crabbing, because you can catch your limit quick. But if you can't get nothing for them, you haven't. I mean.
Yeah.
You got to be careful putting people on limits and stuff, because you figure it's not like it's a whole bunch of picking houses. The crabs are run up and down the road, all up and down the East Coast. And you go putting limits on people that time of year, and they feel full from South Carolina, North Carolina, and then you have nothing. I mean, what good is it? If you can't make no money on it, it's no good.
Well, that exists now, but we're in the Bay, as you see, and the Bay's not doing too well, not just Virginia. The Bay's not doing too well. So, you know, it has to be picking your markets. It's just like the way striped bass evolved into picking your markets. You're not going to stop Georgia with anything we do, or South Carolina or North Carolina, regardless. So, you know, what I see in 2013 and what I've heard from crabbers is that not too good, but the money was pretty good. So, I mean, I don't know the market like you do, because you have to be part of the market. But these things will have to be, you know, figured out.
You can't control yourself, but you've got to allow yourself to be competitive. I mean, if you don't allow people to be competitive, I mean,
well, the prices in Virginia, what I learned many years ago, are not controlled by Virginia fishermen. The prices in Virginia are controlled by just what you said earlier. Georgia, North Carolina, all the states that have crabs that are landed in various places, that's what's controlling the price. So it's complicated. I mean, it really is complicated. I don't disagree with you at all, David.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, Mr. Ryler, staff. Can you clarify a little bit of a couple of them categories? Like, where it says lower in 215 for spring bushels, I mean, what kind of limits are you talking about? I mean, can you give us some better numbers and just...
We're working on that, David.
I mean, that's pretty vague just to say lower.
Well, it has to be, because... You know, again, we've had this information a few days. We did not know what the winter dredge survey was doing. We did not know until we got the information.
What you expected?
Ty was next.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just had one follow-up question. What clarifies a spring crab in what months? Because it says lower crab pod spring bushel limits. I mean, what months are spring?
That starts...
April, May, or
April 1, and that's something that we'll have to work out through the commission as to when spring stops. I mean, spring stops June 20th usually, but that's not, you know, something that is nailed down. It's just the idea is we don't want to open up in the spring after having some savings, if you can call it that, just to turn it loose.
That's what I'm saying. When would we get a little more clarification on bushels and days and dates and stuff like that? That would kind of definitely give us a better option of decision. I mean, it's very
I would
right
say
there.
Within – we've got to have 2 weeks. We've got to have 2 weeks to work this up.
But, I mean, are we going to have another CMAQ committee before it goes to the June?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But you said in May you're presenting it.
I mean, well, May is just a discussion. We take 2 months with the commission. The first month is to say, here's what we have. And at that meeting, they say, here's what goes to public hearing.
And that's by the end of June?
For June.
For June.
By May, okay, by May 27th, we'll walk out of here knowing what the commission wants us to advertise for June.
So we're going to run all the CMAQ committee in the end of May, and then so you can present that to the June committee. June.
Your advice is always brought back to the commission as part of the public hearing.
I think what he's trying to get to, are we going to have another meeting before the May
discussion
meeting?
That's what I mean, because it's coming up pretty
or
quick.
Or is this it tonight? Is this it tonight, or do we make this known by email? How do we?
Yeah, we're pushing it.
That's
we can try and do that, but that is, that's cutting it close.
We're going back to what Marshall was talking about here. We're being put on the spot to make this decision tonight.
Yeah, big spot. When we only have no hard numbers.
Well, there are no decisions. There's only some recommendations tonight to get your ideas.
After the May meeting, the commission meeting, they're going to expect you to be advertising something for June.
That's what I'm saying. That's pretty quick.
Listen, I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
A long time. So, see? You can tell I have. No. You have many opportunities. Time to come to the commission meeting in May 27th and tell the commission meeting what you want. Or, and then we'll meet again before the June meeting, or we can try to get everything organized enough to meet before May 27th. I knew Marshall was right about the process here, but you have to realize it's affecting all of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Ty was next.
So, David, if that was indeed your question, because you said end of May, if you were indeed asking could we do something before May 27th, we will know that probably early next week. There's still some things we have to do, so as a staff.
Yeah, because I was saying we definitely need some clarification. I mean, even like on the top one, bushel trips, limiting trips through July 15th to August. That's another thing. I mean, how many bushels?
Well, here's another response to you, if I can finish up, Mr. Chairman. You have the 2014 bushel limits. We have given those to you. So just imagine them being a little bit lower, and when you come to our next meeting, then you have a frame of reference of how much lower they should be.
That's why a little bit lower could be 2 bushels. 20 bushels is deadly. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of variable there and a little bit.
Pin you down.
Pretty vague.
All right.
And then we're in a rough spot again because you're asking for us to make limits when you don't know what the 2015 winter dredge survey is going to produce. It might come out tit to crabs everywhere.
Look at table one. Joe, did you make table one?
Yes, it's been handed out.
Okay. Take table one and look at table one, and I don't think you're going to have any doubts that we're in some trouble.
No, I don't.
I agree with you.
Can I have a minute?
But then you look at these years where they pop back.
Go ahead, Ty.
First of all, why are you pulling the trigger so fast on this? What's pushing this? And second of all, I'm going to warn every one of y'all sitting here agreeing with this crap after what happened in 08. In 08, all that stuff was passed, and I've got newspaper articles here about April of 09 of how glorious the regulations have worked. Closing down dredging saved 15 to 20 million females. Jack Travelstead. Winds and Tides by Ken Smith probably had more effects of it. John Bull says, no, not winds and tides at all. Scientists are saying that it was all due to the regulation changes in 08. And we had this great population that probably started before the closure of dredging and the regulations were changed in 08. And now there's a little downfall for 2 years. If you look at the 99 downfall, 53, the next year it went to 93. If we're staying in the threshold, why are you even considering this? If the harvest isn't going outside, if we're not overfishing, this is uncalled for. Exactly throwing this industry in the dirt and stomping us in the dirt. The buyers can't handle it. The harvesters can't handle it. And just like Ken Jr. said, we get thrown in the dirt. we get stuck in the corner with load limits or no harvest, and the south winds, they get to come up and do whatever they want, sell for whatever they want, because they're going to get the same increase we got. Just like in 09 when there were crabs clean up the Maine that in places that never saw crabs before. But it was all due, all this big East Coast crab population boom was due to the new regulations Virginia and Maryland did on a 34% reduction. Y'all fall in order with this, and this industry's done. You need to fight this. You don't need to agree with it.
I agree with Ty.
This is wrong. One year, you got this one year. Probably most likely happened due to puppy drums eating whatever crabs were out there, but hopefully they're gone and not doing it. But I've heard they're coming back.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah,
there's plenty of them.
But one year, you go from 147 adult spawning female to 68.5, and you're ready to throw us in the dirt where we can't even compete if it does return next year. And once they put those regulations in place, you'll never get them back.
I didn't see them overturn anything.
This is wrong, Rob O'Reilly.
Well, don't call my name. I didn't hear any questions. If you want to ask me a question, that's fine. I will answer your question. But you didn't have a question there. Those were all recriminations. I like David's question better.
That's fact. That was a question. I've got every report from the Daily Press to the Washington Post.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to just briefly touch on a couple of things Ty said. One is, please don't hang your hat on the fact that we're not overfishing. We are overfished by the best science that we have. We are overfished. And guess what? Being overfished is a lot worse than overfishing, because you can correct overfishing. Go look at the Magnuson managed species, where they have 10-year rebuilding phases and everything else to counter being overfished. We are overfished. We do have to do something. I do not wish to sit here next year and say, we didn't do anything, and we're overfished again because of it. We have 37 million pounds bay-wide. If that's not something in the dirt for an industry, I don't know what is.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm not trying to get involved in every little aspect of what you want me to get involved in, because those are there. They're in Table 1. Look at those. 2008 did make a difference. You can't do everything just because of what you do with management. If any manager tells you that, they're wrong. There is an environment out there. The environment has a big role until those recruits come in the bay. When those recruits come in the bay, we get to manage. We don't manage what happens before those recruits get in the bay and they're out in the ocean waiting to come in as megalopian and all those little nice biological characteristics. So, I mean, you're going to be in the minority, I think, about this situation, because it's a public resource. You overfish a public resource, it has reverberations. Right. And overfished, depleted, we can call it what it wants. So, I mean, I take this pretty seriously. You take your viewpoint seriously, and, you know.
Mr. Chairman.
Does the public have any comment on this? I'd like to make a few comments.
Sure.
Our industry is going downhill fast, and it's going to continue to go downhill fast. And regulating the crabs is not the answer. We got to regulate the predators, and we haven't done that. I preach the same thing over and over again. Some people can't open their eyes wide enough to see that. But first thing, if we do lose the puppy drum where they don't consume as many crabs as they did, we got millions and millions of little croakers about as long as that pencil there last summer. If they didn't die during the winter, 2 years' time, they're going to take over what the puppy drum done the last couple of years. Until we can control the predators in the bay, eliminate, have increase in the rockfish quotas, and do something with the blue catfish, which Virginia don't want to do anything with, we're not going to have a crabbing fish. I can tell you that. And I got science and facts to back that up. We gotta put that on the agenda, Mr. Riley. And until we do, we're never going to have a blue crab industry back here in the bay. The small crab has got to be able to grow up and become a large crab, and they can't do it in the stomach of a rockfish, or a croaker, a puppet drum, or a blue catfish. And we have more of them by the millions in the bay now than they will ever have.
Well,
some of your crab advisor things should be addressed to predation.
Well, that hasn't stopped in 100 years as far as fish eating crabs. What don't eat crabs in the bay?
I realize that, but it's more rockfish in the bay now than it's ever been in the history. And they stay here year round, the small ones.
Go ahead.
I think Doug's making a really good point of what happened several years ago. There was a big move in the bay community to adopt ecosystem based fishery management. And I got a good head start here, and then it's just sort of dwindled away. There's more interest in there. I am in total agreement that we have to deal with the full complex, the full food web, and I think it would be worthwhile for this committee to at least make a recommendation, suggestion that we start to seriously revisit the ecosystem-based fishery management. Because that's exactly what it tries to do. It tries to deal with all the different predators and so on.
Right. Rob? So I was able to spend a little time with Rom and others in the bay in the ecosystem-based fisheries management run, which didn't last long enough. It is coming back a little bit, but it's still a long-term approach. I would not think that this news I'm going to give you is very comforting, because ASMSC is getting ready in May to May the 12th, I believe it is, to look at cuts in rockfish, number one. So what does that mean? The second is red drum, puppy drum. We can't do anything with puppy drum until there is a new stock assessment. We can't do a thing. We're able to raise up the limit by two fish commercially. Croaker will probably also see management soon. Despite what Doug says, which I don't doubt, that you've got a lot of small croaker, I think on a regional basis, including North Carolina and going all the way up to New Jersey, we're probably looking at some management changes from ASMSC as well. So that's the near time. So for that reason, we do have to focus on blue crab until we can get some of these other changes that Doug and Rom are talking about.
Go ahead.
You said it was time to look at a more serious, maybe I'm misquoting a little bit, but you wanted to take a serious look at management measures. In my lifetime, not just you, but I mean, you have been instrumental in shutting down 90% of the bay. You took wiped out a complete crabgrass fishery. In the last few years, some of us have lost our stream limit.
Lost the pod reduction in our license.
How much more serious do
you need to look at this?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. All right. I'm going to say this one more time. If he stands up in front of this commission, staff does, and says that we're over harvesting and we don't try to work with that, 90% of the time staff will get what they want. We are better off to try to work together and come up with a plan, even though it might not suit us all. If he puts that in front of them and says that's what staff recommends, and we sit around with our mouth shut, it's our own fault. We all need to work. I've learned a long time ago, if you can work with staff and work, they give a little bit, we give a little bit, we'll get something. If we don't give nothing, they'll take it all, especially if he stands up and says, we're over-harvested. The stock's down, and something needs to be done. That's what will happen. You can rest assured that, because that's what they're hired for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're not over-harvesting, Mr. Chairman. I didn't say that. We are not over-harvesting. The stock is overfished.
Overfished.
Or depleted, yeah. And that's not something, that's a lot different than over-harvesting.
You can rest assured they'll take it that way.
And I, Marshall, you've known me a long time, and we're going to work it out so you can have something as a joint system with us, okay?
How do we know it's not just
over? If we work together, it'll work. If we don't work together, it's not going to.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I got a question. So you want recommendations tonight, basically, is what you want.
What I really wanted was for you to comment on these. Right, and then if you said, hey, that's really not good, here's something better, that's fine.
I've got a few issues, okay? Crab pot seasonal April 1st is a bad idea. Okay, what you're going to do is you're going to put all these crabs on the market in a glut. It's going to drive the price down. That's why I believe we went to March 17th. We're going to turn right back around and do the same thing by allowing us to start April 1st. As far as the date, July 15th, I don't think that's a good idea. I think that you should take that date and go to July 5th. And the reason behind that is Maryland, after July 5th, can't have busted crabs. We're trying to save busted crabs. Okay? So move it to July 5th. Change that date. That's my recommendation.
Both comments are very appreciated.
No, I like to talk about the crab industry as a whole. You know, you guys, the crab down here are lucky. I mean, from what I've seen since I've been crabbing, since I was small, you know, it was crabs everywhere, and now we're down to a small area down the bay here where you catch some. Come up my way and crab in the Potomac or in the Rappahannock, where you can fish 300 pots and fish them every other day and hope you catch 3 bushels. You know, try that for a living. You know, we've got problems, and I don't know what they all stem from. I don't want to see anything closed. And I'll tell you why. It's because with the pila pot industry, it varies so much with the time, the temperature, and where you're at. And if you close something for a couple of weeks, somebody in a certain area could miss the whole season and the best part of their season. But I think you can control these things with limits. I think that's our best way to go. You know, a week or two ago, females were $100 a bushel. You know, if somebody could catch 20 bushels a day at that and continue to do that, I think they'd be pretty good. And the I don't know what the other states are doing or how their crab fisheries are, but even the same thing with the pila industry. Maybe the best way to control it is with a reduction instead of just shut somebody down for a certain amount of time.
Well, my answer to that one is, as far as bushel limits, you know, we've started bushel limits and barrel limits. You know, we got some crab buyers here. You know, when I first started crabbing, you catch 30 barrels, 25 barrels, 20 barrel limit,
17
barrel limits.
Yeah.
You know, you keep dropping your limits down, you know, our harvest might peak up a couple years, but then drop right back down. You know, we cut a whole fishery out for 6 years, 7 years.
Six.
6 years. You know, and our trend is still the same. You know, this fix is not going to be easy. You know, this fix is...
What's the limit now?
I don't even know what the limit is now.
It varies.
That was the dredge fishery limits.
They were the dredge fishery limits, is what I was giving you. You know, as far as limits.
Right.
You know, we've thrown different, you know, time closures, you know, everything in the world at this, you know, and we still headed down the same path, you know.
Well, effort's a lot of that. So the limits you're talking about for the dredge fishery, what no one was really considering was the shrinking
of the biomass.
No, the shrinking of the effort.
Oh, right.
I mean, there were 300 and plus harvesters back in the late 80s, still early 90s. Well, that shrunk.
If I could, just when you talk about biomass, let me just give a little example. Up the Rappahannock, in 5 or 6 years ago, I'm talking about way up almost to Port Royal, we could go up there with 250 pots, and you could catch 50, 75 bushels a day. And a lot of people heard about it. They started coming up there. Last year, you go up there with 250 pots,
you might catch 5 bushels a day. Every year, just boom, 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 boom.
Well,
we caught them.
Have we looked at how our fishing strategy has changed over the years? You know?
We got better.
I mean, they've all gotten better. They've all, you know, you're fishing longer, you're fishing harder than we did years ago. I'm just throwing something out
and
here.
And the bay harvest, you close the whole bay. People used to crab on busted sooks and on sooks out in the middle of the bay and everything. And then between the price of crabs being so low and the male price in the bushel market, it's forced people. The most popular crabbing boat in the state of Virginia is no longer a dead rise work boat. It's a Carolina skiff, okay? Every crabber, how many of them are throwing their peelers over? They go up there. As soon as the price of crabs drop or the busted crabs hit, they're like he said, as far up every creek, ditch, and river as you can go, there's people that start crab potting, okay? And they're catching number twos, shedded sooks, peelers, and number one jimmies. Okay, you took everybody, you forced them out, and then you took the whole bay fishery in the summer, you basically closed it down. Then you closed it down in the wintertime, okay? They don't respond. The management that's working, we speak of framework. Maybe you might have to do some new framework because it's not working. They're not responding to that. It was better, it seems, when everybody was out there focusing on the biomass of the crabs working out there. You shoved everybody up there, and then you got everybody that's got a dock has crab pots tied to the end of it with a light on it that at nighttime is on. It's got little crabs swimming around just to get eaten. I mean, stuff's changed so much, but the harvest trends, I think, is not good for the future of crabs because if you're out there working on adult spawn of females, that's done. They've done their thing, most of them. You're not going to get them all, you know. It's no point just, like, throwing the busted sooks over. You've done this for years and years and years. You've adjusted it, let us keep them longer. It makes no – that's not – When everybody was keeping them and doing that, things were working. When things shifted, something has to be – it has to have a factor in it. I mean, if you catch them like that when they're soft and haven't shedded yet, they're definitely not going to spawn like that. But that's what you're going to catch when you get everybody off of these awful busted sooks and stuff like that. Instead, you can send them up a river and let them catch 20, 25, you know, shedded crabs, females or males in a pot that are ultimately – like economic value, they have very low economic value and stuff. And something like that needs to be considered because what we've been doing, like they said, it hasn't worked when it used to work 100%.
Well, that should be looked in a little more as far as, you know, the style of fishing was changed as things have adapted.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, another thing, too, which we don't have saying it could be a lot of pollution. I mean, you know, over the years, too, like he said, up to Rappahannock, I mean, some of that may have depleted because they've got more pollution up there. You know, I mean, there's a lot more pollution in the bay. I mean, I know we don't have a fix on that, but I'm saying, you know, they never take that in consideration that, you know, the bay water has changed over the last so many years. But yet the waterman's always taking the sacrifice. So, I mean, I feel with Ken and everybody else that we always take it on the chin. There is a lot of variable issue. I mean, there's more industry, there's more pollution. The bay water is definitely not as clean as it was. I mean, but we're always the one that has to take it on the chin. I mean, it is very aggravating.
I'm going to sit here tonight, and I'm going to make a bold statement. Anybody can say what they want. This is my belief. This is the way it's going to, you know, this is the way I see it. If you wind back the clock to the 80s when the peeler pot was introduced, what do we have to work on? What I'm trying to say here as far as strategy of fishing, how things has changed and how things has evolved in the last 30 years to where we're at today, okay? As Rob mentioned earlier, you know, I don't want to see nobody out of a job. I know how that is. I've been out of one in the wintertime. That was 40% of my yearly income. I don't sit here and throw it down, you know, I'd love to have this fishery back. I don't have it back. But what do we need to do to regulate? I mean, I realize, you know, you can throw, you know, water quality. You can, you know, if that was the case, then the oysters would be dying. I don't know if that plays any role in it or not. But if something isn't done as far as keeping our nurseries open a little longer, letting them breathe a little while, you know, I'm sorry, people, we're not going to have anything. That's my opinion. That's what I've seen in my 30-year career.
I agree.
I've been doing it long with that, and I agree with you.
I agree also.
Have you considered expansion of sanctuaries? Has that ever that popped in your head?
The whole thing? Where are we going to go?
I think the history of the sanctuary is that it was looked at pretty carefully back in 2001, if I remember, as to where it had protection for female crabs, where it had protection for sponge crabs. The author of the sanctuary is here, but I was able to read about all that. I lived through the sanctuary expansions, as you did. The sanctuary probably does need some, you know, assessment because it's been a number of years since there's been a study. But, you know, Marsha, you have a great point all the time. But there are other good points here. I'm encouraged, for the most part, I'm encouraged by what happened just a little while ago when we had three good comments about what's going on here. We'll meet. I just talked to Joe a little bit. We're going to try and meet May the 20th.
Tuesday, May
20th. Tuesday, May the 20th, which puts us in a situation where we have mail-outs to the commission on the 22nd. So it may be if you have kind of extensive things you want to go over by May the 20th, some of that will have to be reported to the commission, but we'll do our best to put it into the mail-out materials. You know, the comments we have tonight are – some of them are far-reaching, and I am very anxious to get out of the crisis mode and very anxious to hear the committee get back to where it used to be before around 2004, back when temporary sanctuaries were proposed for the upriver areas, back when there was a lot of creative thoughts coming from the committee. And I'm not saying you're not creative. I'm just saying you've been under crisis mode for a long time as a committee. It's like, what's next? So I am hearing you, Ken, and I'm hearing everybody else too. So let's kind of focus on that. I don't know whether you want to do more on this tonight, but I would appreciate it if you email us and we'll assemble them. And then as a group, we can take the Marshall Plan, the new Marshall Plan, and we can kind of interact on May the 20th. We do not have any stake in how we have this two-pronged approach. In other words, we have some ideas, but we'll certainly welcome your ideas. You have to be intellectually honest, which means you won't be able to float something that really isn't going to do anything. You need to look at the 2014 bushel limits you have already from us. If you don't have them, call us or email us. We'll send them to you so you can look at those. So when you see what Joe Grist puts together, you know, with a little assistance from me, you'll be able to see what's involved there and a little assistance from other people too. We have multiple staff people. The problem is time. So we'll do our best to meet with you May the 20th. We'll meet with you May the 20th. I don't even know what's on my calendar, but there's plenty of staff here that we can say that, and we can try and get these bushel limits cranked out. So please keep these comments. You know, Mark's comments were good. Please keep those in mind. Yes.
Coming up with bushel limits for 2015, I have a problem with that. I mean, if we're going to come up with bushel limits for 2015, why don't we come up with those bushel limits after we get the winter dredge survey back in 2015? That, you know, maybe we can do something for the spring, but then that be incorporated, what we caught in the spring be taken from or given back?
Second time's a charm, Ken. So we can put bushel limits in place for 2015 for the same – I'm going to answer differently than you think I am. We can put them in place for 2015 for the same reason we put 2014 bushel limits in 2013. However, if it works out that we can change when we have to do our management, then we have time to revise those bushel limits. How's that?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you're talking about bushel limit.
Okay.
Bushel limit 14.
Quite wrong.
What year we're talking about, 15 or 14?
We have 2014 bushel limits.
Yeah, but is there a reduction in that?
We have to reduce them.
Okay.
Quite wrong.
You keep talking about 15.
I just put that's what he said.
Mark was talking about with the sanctuary. At this point, I feel like the previous work that we did with the sanctuary shows that it's effective. I think once the crabs get into the sanctuary, they're protected during that time of year, during spawning season. They're also protected in the wintertime, obviously, without the winter dredge fishery. So in my view, there's not really strong evidence for expanding the sanctuary. You might be shocked to hear me say that, but
I
think the effort needs to be placed more on the spring, the peeler runs, the spring and fall pod fisheries, because that's where the females are getting, where you get the recruitment. And so what's been protected through the winter doesn't make it to spawn. And also the females, just a little bit of life history. The crabs in the lower bay, Potomac Down, the females are migrating, as you know, the peeler runs. They're coming down to spawn in May and June, and maybe parts of July. For Maryland, they don't come down there. We've got a big hypoxic zone, so they're coming down in the fall. So you've got two major groups. The Maryland females are coming down to overwinter in the fall, so they're getting hit by the fall pod fishery. And then, of course, the spring, while the females from Virginia are getting hit primarily by the peeler run, some by the spring pod fishery, and then, but they get a chance to spawn, but then they get hit again by the fall. So the point is that I think it's those three fisheries, if you want to focus on females, peeler runs, and the spring and fall pod fisheries, whatever be bushel limits or so, I think that makes much more sense to me than to do any more with the sanctuary. And you've already covered the winter. So.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for staff.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask staff, what's Maryland and Potomac River, their stand on the crab issue, and what do they plan on doing about it? And also, do we have any idea on the maybe North Carolina, South Carolina, the southern states, how their crab surveys have come, or what's going on there with their crab?
Someone on staff usually checks around with the other states. My understanding about 2013, I do the second question first, 2013 was it wasn't just a bay situation. There certainly were crabs up in places where, you know, in a little more abundance where they usually aren't, but that there was also sort of an East Coast phenomenon. Haven't had really time to talk to all the states. We will contact the states for you south before the next meeting. I mean, that's something we can do.
I think that's important. And
yeah,
we plan on changing limits, and somebody else has a lot of crabs somewhere. We don't want to put ourselves in a jam where we just.
Well, I would agree with you if we could roll back the clock to the years where we could say we had some abundance to talk about harvesting enough to be competitive. But we're at the state where low harvest, low abundance. So, you know, we have to kind of watch that a little bit. The other thing is, Maryland indicates, the reason I said bay-wide in those first two is Maryland has indicated that they're going to have trip limits in the summer, reduced trip limits, pardon me, whereas we use the bushel limits, they're going to you do reduced trip limits. They have not told us specifically the detail of what they're going to do for the juveniles from now until 2015, but when you see that press release, you see the two-pronged attack or whatever it's called, that is what that refers to. They are committed to the commissioner to do something as well for the juveniles, just like us. PRFC, we've been told so far that they don't shut down in November right now, but they will for complementary reasons for the two states. Right now, I think what they have is sort of a closure that goes area specific and then goes to the other area?
Up the river is closed for a week, middle's closed for a week, catching the females, and the lower's closed for a week, catching.
But we will definitely want to see that they close November the 10th. So that's what I know so far. You know, we just met with them last Friday.
Oh, I have a question for you, Rob. What is the percentage now that the Peter Pot fishery harvest baywide?
Baywide?
Off Virginia.
I'd say 3 million pounds out of 37, so 1 out of 12, so about 8%.
8%?
Mm-hmm. Recently.
That's if the numbers are correct.
Hmm?
That's if the numbers are correct.
That's right.
Right. It doesn't account for discard.
What about the other numbers? Are they correct? You got to go by the numbers. You got to go by one. You got to go by them all.
I think that's a discussion for the committee, not tonight, but that's why we came to you with the pricing information. And I'll tell you the way I think sometimes when a staff member, Kelsey, suggested that she bring the pricing information, I said, well, the committee's going to know we have terrible pricing information because it's voluntary and we don't get that many. And another staff member said, well, that's a good opportunity to get some help from the industry. So same thing goes with the reporting. You need to tell us a little bit about where you think the holes are, you know, anonymous, but where the holes are.
Well, the point I want to make is that's such a little percent of the fishery, the field pot industry, compared to the crab pot or the hard crab industry, 8% of the fishery. Most people got in their mind that they catch a few peelers as cutting their hard crab back so much. But it really isn't. A bushel of peelers, females, is 300. And a male is around 190 to a bushel. So if a peeler harvests 50 bushels of peelers during a season, that would equal either 200 or 300 bushels of hard crab. And a lot of the hard crab was catch that many, especially down in the lower part of the bay, in a week or two. And I'm talking about the whole season for the peeling industry. So I really, that mentality that somebody's got up here in his head, since the peeler pot industry has declined so much over the years, a lot of them went out of business because they jumped in there and they didn't know what the hell they was doing. And they caught crabs and probably half of them weren't peelers. And after they paid for the electric bill and the pumps and the fiberglass floats and the work they had to go over them, they went out. But I've been peel potting for a long time.
Yeah.
I got you by a few years, 65 there, to the year 30. And we had bank traps and we would catch more in 10 bank traps than two peel potters with 300 pot license. And we had plenty of hard crabs in, let me tell you. You couldn't even sell a soup. You couldn't sell a soup for $1.50 a bushel in that area.
I got it.
But that was yesterday. We talked about today.
All right, go ahead.
I got a comment about
more questions.
What you're talking about. And this is my opinion. In my opinion, the Baywide Sanctuary has forced me, a hard crabber, I usually crab in the bay, up these creeks, and basically turn me into a peeler potter. Because all I'm doing is I'm waiting for that crab to shed, harden up, and then I catch it. I work on that crab. I think there's a real problem with the sanctuary. We need to really look at that and basically try to find, I guess, a more level, you know, playing field. You know, let more people go back into the bay. Get away from the tributaries is how I feel about it. And I think that's the big problem. That's my opinion. You know, you've turned me into a peeler potter in essence. Plain and simple. Right.
Just so we can talk at some other time, but the 8% is actually a higher fraction than it typically has been. The peeler fishery, this is by pounds, has usually been 4 or 5%. However, in numbers, it usually has been 10%. So by numbers, it's even higher now. We do have unquantified concerns that the reporting and the information from the Peeler fishery is not good. I hope you'll help us with that information, not to give us the information, but to give us a sense of what the industry is doing there. So it's a tug of war that's existed since 1994 on the Peeler fishery versus crab pot fishery.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, huh?
Rob, what's the time frame suggested for the 2014 fall harvest of closure for the fall harvest of females?
Right now, November 15th in Virginia, November 10th in Maryland and PRFC. But you heard Ken Smith earlier. It's likely that the commission can look at something in October. We can talk about that on the 20th, too.
So you said November 15th?
15th.
Instead of going through to the 30th, like the bushel limits are in place now, indicated it was going to go through the end of November.
It did last year, the end of 2013.
Isn't our male crab population in a low decline now too?
And I would say it's the lowest I've seen in the survey, 25 years. Okay. 29 million male crabs.
Now,
something to look into too, Ty, because that's what everybody's going to be doing.
One thing that hasn't been studied recently, I talked to Rahm about it a couple of weeks ago, a month ago maybe, do we have enough males to fertilize the females? And Rahm did tell me that these mature sooks can molt out as a mature sook and not be fertile. And she can bust out with eggs and have eggs that are not fertile. So how many of these crabs that we're protecting out there or want to protect are fertile? Do we need to protect the males more than the females now? What's the problem? I mean, we're addressing females, but if you're saving a female that's not fertile, what have you done?
Yeah. Joe Grist, to my right, next meeting, can give you an update about what the Chesapeake Bay is thinking about this, the Stock Assessment Group is thinking about this. There are protective measures for males, even though this is a female-based biological reference point. They do have an interim approach, which I'll let Joe explain rather than me next meeting, as to when it's unsafe, when the level's absolutely unsafe. The news now is it's not. Concerning rates of insemination, I've been listening to both sides of that for years and years and years, and I'd be really happy that there would be a final decision on that, because I heard last Friday from Maryland that Tuck Hines from CERC, which is the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center, has published a paper that says no problem. So, I mean, this thing goes back and forth, Ty. I kind of am in your camp on this, though, because the males are low. So how much is science able to understand with study, throughout time? I agree with you. I just need Joe to walk us through the process of what's going on. That's a good point.
I'd be glad at the next meeting to get you everything that CBSAC in the last 2 years looked at. They've looked at this whole sperm limitation issue pretty extensively the last 2 years. Tuck Hines from CERC, Dr. McConaughey from ODU has spoken. We've had a lot of discussion on it, and we haven't come up with anything conclusive to say that there really is a sperm limitation issue going on. There's not enough males covering the females.
Is there a way to take X amount of bushels of female crabs out of the Chesapeake Bay in different areas and test them at the stage of life they're in now to find out if they're fertile or not?
I mean, that was part of the studies that they do, is they're testing crabs from the bay, doing that very thing.
They're doing that right now this year or last year?
As far as whether they're continuing their studies for this year, I don't know, but I will find out.
Because, I mean, it's not going to do any good if you do it back in 08 and 09 when, I mean, the jimmies were so thick in the James River all the way up to Hopewell, the kids were afraid to go in the water, you know. And my last question for Joe is any update on the CBSAC discussion on trigger management?
I was getting ready to bring that up next.
Yikes. You ready for that? We're ready. Do you have
this is a prime example of why trigger management would be a good way to manage. You got a low stock, you can lower limits, if you got a high stock, you can raise limits.
Yeah.
But you don't need to permanently throw us in the dirt with low limits.
It's a great visual there, but no one's throwing you in the dirt.
All right. Closing my drudge season, Rob. You got to understand where I'm coming from, and it's not just me.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, so my conclusion is that CMAQ is probably going to have to help staff figure out these triggers. What you saw last October that Joe and I worked up didn't really impress CBSAC. We had a phone conference with them
April 16th,
thank you. And I thought some of their comments, before I get into the data, were unusual, because I spent a lot of time before the information on triggers explaining to them we aren't asking whether they like a winter dredge fishery season. We aren't asking them about that. But by the way, we have a very good plan that was developed that if there can be a limited winter dredge fishery season, we should be able to do that if we have the right triggers. They didn't like, I can't see that far maybe, but let's see. They didn't like the fact that what we presented them on the right here is we selected 11 years, I think it is, which are highlighted, where the exploitation rate was low in terms of 29% or less. And then we also looked at the juvenile abundance, the total abundance, and the female abundance, that's better. And when you do that and take an average, you see the numbers running across that first set of cells, 543 for both sexes for total crabs, juvenile crabs, 346 males and females, and spawning age crabs, 146. So in the back of your mind, you know, just know that of all that, there's a 215 million female spawning crab. So on the call, we tried to vigorously impress the CBSAC that while we're willing to say the trigger should have something to do about the spawning age females, it really has something to do with the juveniles, which we talked about a lot tonight. The juveniles from the Winter Dredge Survey are the crabs that are picked up by a dredge fishery because they have, you know, grown into that size. They've recruited to the fishery. So the group did not like the standard error. The standard error is just a measure of dispersion from the average. So the average plus or minus is all you have to think about. They felt that with enough similar values coming back from the winter dredge survey in a number of years, the standard error would get so small that it would be very easy to open the dredge fishery. So they also had comments they didn't like the what's called the mean there, the average. They didn't care for that either. I found it to be an unrewarding conference because I said to them three times, look, what we want, if you don't like what we have here, you have to tell us what you think is the right thing to do. And they hemmed and hawed and said, well, take a percentage of the spawning age females and a percentage off the top, say 85%, and use that. I wasn't impressed. I was on CBSAC for 20 years. I wasn't impressed with discussion. Matter of fact, I'm still on CBSAC, I guess, but that's another story. So what we did is Joe and I talked some more. We tried five different ways that we could please CBSAC, and we couldn't really do it. No matter how you work with the data, even though there's 25 years, when you look at that table one closely, there's a lot of difference there. So we finally decided that what we have to do is we have to say, here's our best offer. And that's what you see in pink there. Sally, who's still there in the row behind us, worked this up. And the yeses, it's small print, but above the first column where you see pink, it's female, juvenile and female abundance greater than the average, the arithmetic mean. So we decided we're going to stick with that. And instead of having a standard error or anything else like that, we're just going to use the average values. And the yes means that in, it looks like 1991, 1993, and 2010, that would have triggered opening the dredge fishery. The next column over is juvenile and female abundance greater than the geometric mean, but when the exploitation rate, the first column didn't care about the exploitation rate, or did it, Sally? Yeah, it did care about the exploitation rate, has to be 29% or less. Same thing with the second column, but this is a geometric mean. You really don't want to know the difference between the geometric mean. The only thing I know about the geometric mean from way back is if you have zeros in your data, the geometric mean's the way to go to get an average, essentially. The geometric mean is more liberal. It's what scientists use, but it's more liberal in this case than the arithmetic average. And you see now 4 years where it would have said, okay, there's your trigger. Then we move over to the right where we really don't pay attention to the 11 years essentially that have 29% or less exploitation rate, removal rate, whatever you want to call it. And we see a little similar pattern in terms of the same 3 years. If you have juvenile and female abundance greater than the time series arithmetic mean. So that's from 1990 all the way to 2013, okay? 3 years. If you move to the far right, it's the geometric mean. That opens up six times, six out of 25. That's about 25%. 25% of the time, if that was our trigger, it would signal to the commission, you can open the fishery. Now, we haven't yet. Joe sent this to the committee. I'll call it the committee, and asked them to respond. We had one response,
yes,
which was not real helpful, but actually the guy who sent the response is going to help us work on it, so that's helpful. What I think is going to happen here is we have a little time. It is important, as Ty said, to have this probably for all fisheries eventually, but clearly when this started, this was for the winter dredge fishery. But for the winter dredge fishery to get a reopening, there should be some kind of trigger for the commission, some way the commission could say, you know what, okay. I don't know when that happens. I really don't, but okay. Then, if there are problems later on, it should be all the fisheries that are looked at collectively to see what has to be done to help the problem. That's really where we stand. By May 20th, we should have other comments from other committee members. I mean, I don't want to go into details, but I just really thought some of the comments we received were not the kind of thing I would expect. So, you know, that I think that's a pretty good characterization. Still working on it. Oh, yes. Yes, thank you, Danielle. Yeah, we did let them know about the mortality study. I talked about that. We went through the sand and mud. We went through the whole situation because I wanted them, even though realistically it's the commission that makes the decision, I wanted them to know the effort that went in to a limited opening, and then they could at least not have to be hung up on that while they looked at the trigger information.
Any more questions?
Okay.
All right, I guess we'll wrap this meeting up.
Are you going to have a new business?
Oh, any new business? I'm sorry. New at this.
Yeah. I want to talk about this. It's probably not the right time to talk about this.
If you strongly feel that way, then let's not talk about it.
I think really we should, just briefly. Down in the Lower Bay, Lynn Haven area, basically after the 15th, we're stuck there. We can't go in the bay whatsoever. Okay, we're all jammed into the Lynn Haven River. And over the years, there's been more and more pots going up there. It's overcrowded. And basically, you know, we'd like some other place to go. We'd like to go back down to the oceanfront. I talked briefly with Joe, I guess he had to go, about this. You know, the rest of the bay, the sanctuary, as you know, they go out to the 25-foot or 30-foot contour. We were wondering if we can get a small area opened out there from Cape Henry Light to, say, 40th Street, something like that, so we can kind of get away from everything, give us a small area. You did a realignment up at the Smith Point area a few years back. You know, we're just asking for a small area is what we're asking for. You know, and then I guess I want to also touch on law enforcement.
Well, before you get there, I'm familiar with your request.
Okay.
And if anyone doesn't know what happened, in 2007, there was an extension of the sanctuary into the coastal area down to the North Carolina line. So my recommendation is, on the 20th, which will still be packed with right. all sorts of discussion, this committee decide whether the effort stack up and everything else, whether that's going to induce any other harvest. It shouldn't,
yeah.
given the conditions we're in, and then make that part of the recommendations.
Right. And I'll say law enforcement. I think that was brought up at the last meeting, their efforts and stuff like that. In different areas, you know, there's problems with call rings, people shutting them. You know, no call rings, you know, and this is probably all over the bay. I know in 2007 they did, the law enforcement did a massive go out, pull everybody's pots up, and it was in the newspaper, y'all arrested yes. so many people. You know, if our resource is in such bad shape, why aren't you doing it now? Why isn't law enforcement really enforcing the laws, I guess, in my opinion? I mean, to me, it seems like they're not doing their job. They did a great job with the oysters. You know, I know they arrested quite a few people, you know, that were poaching different things. And I'd like to see, you know, an effort put into the crab pot and also.
I'll be happy to mention that to Colonel Waterman and to let you know something that he mentioned to us is the difficulty with the pot limits.
Yep, that's understandable.
And that they cannot
right.
get a handle on that. I mean, that is just something. There's just too many ways to beat the pot limits. It's frustrating to the colonel and to law enforcement, but I'll be happy to mention
you
that
know,
part.
And this is not only pot limits. It's also call rings. You know,
right.
that's very easily.
No. They're not going to be able to do the pot limits.
I know that. I'm 100%. Okay. I know that. I know it's impossible.
And the oysters, you know, rest assured, that has just begun.
Yeah.
So
well,
that is a big challenge.
Taking action like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Because we lose so many.
Lose too many.
We lose probably 100, 200 pots when you crab in the Lower Bay, and there's no way to
Back in 2009, we presented information on a pod tagging system, but you're talking with striped bass, you're talking about 450 harvesters, 250,000 tags. For crab pots, you're talking 1,000 harvesters and 750,000 pots.
Just to get going.
So you got to not only just talk about the amount of tags, even cheap tags you put out there are cost effective, but you're also talking logistics of putting it out there, the staff time to get it out there, and just also on the harvester. We did a pretty long discussion with CMAQ in 2009 about that, and the budget just to run that program was $250,000 to make it happen, going as cheap as possible in tags and everything else, because it's the volume of the fishery. You know, and we have a lot of experience with tagging with the striped bass program. So it was something that was actually, we spent a lot of time with CMAQ on it with the commission, but at the end of the day, it wasn't feasible at that time. Maybe that comes back up and gets promoted by industry.
And if you've been around long enough, you would know that we had a regulation on the books in 2001 for pot tagging, but we could not get the funding from the administration. That's all right. Glad to see someone who's not here all the time.
Hi. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Well, in our area, if you want law enforcement, come crab around us. That you ain't going to get out of line very far.
Then what you need to do is send him in other places to take care of business.
If you don't believe, you come crab with us, you won't be out of line far. But also, I'd just like to say, I mean, we need to have some kind of checks and balances, too. I mean, we put the whole holy grail in this study, and, I mean, it looks like to me, I mean, if you took all the stuff off the top and showed this to somebody, it looked like to me it ain't nothing but a roller coaster. You got outliers here, outliers there. And, I mean, I could see it look like to me it puts everybody in a bind. I mean, it is what it is when it comes out. And, I mean, a crab dredge is probably one of the most efficient tools to catch a crab, but it's probably can be one of the most inefficient, too, because you can go right over top and not even know what was there. I mean, so it's kind of hit or miss. I mean, it just seems like to me that we put and we come here, and once it's out, then everybody's in this big cram, and whoever, the CBSAC or whatever, everybody has to go together and try to do something. And, I mean, there's no checks and balances. I mean, you look at the stuff, and, I mean, we've done everything we could do on the harvest, and we're harvesting as low as 10% of the crabs out of here. I mean, we can go ahead and make another whole round of regulations and stuff like we always do. And one thing's for sure, they'll cut up a few more boats. They'll smash up a few more crab pots. A few more people will go out of business. A few more crab companies will close. And when stuff like that goes away, it doesn't come back. And, I mean, it's getting to the point where maybe it's the grass. Maybe the crabs are doing their job. They don't have somewhere to hide. They're getting eaten. But it's getting to the point where we're just, I mean, 198 million baby crabs, it's probably, they eat each other, and it's probably 198 million predators in the Chesapeake Bay and all the tributaries that eat on crabs. Everything eats them. They eat themselves. I mean, I don't see how anybody could say, I mean, honestly, that's the little ones. How could something live, really? I don't understand how. I mean, there's probably, I mean, who knows? Does anybody have any idea how many predators it is out there that eats little crabs? I mean, they eat theirself, so that in itself is a lot. And that's what we're going off. That's what you're going to put people out of business. That's what we have to go off of. I mean, that just doesn't – I mean, that's silly. It's easy for somebody to say because, hey, it don't matter what the survey says. It don't matter. It doesn't take now nobody else's paycheck but ours. But obviously, either the survey's not right or the management that we're doing, something's not right, because if you're harvesting 23, 18, 24, all this – and you're not seeing no results, you can take the crab. Look like to me, you could shut us down and you're not going to see any results. So, I mean, it's just either we need to get down to the bottom of what's really causing it. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going like we're going, and the only thing that's going to be extinct is the crabbers and everybody to do with it, and then it won't be no need to even come in here no more. Something needs to be done. There's no way that somebody is not questioning that. How can somebody – has anybody ever driven across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel? Or does anybody have any – I mean, just how big the bay is and all the rivers and stuff, and 198 million little crabs that basically is the bottom of the food chain for everything else to survive on in the Chesapeake Bay. I mean, that just seems like – that just doesn't even – even at 500, 600 – I mean, it seemed like to me it would have to be billions, because, I mean, that just doesn't even – I don't even see how that's even – close to could be right.
All right, guys, anything else?
Oh, make a motion, we close.
Yep, make a motion to close.
Second. Motion.
All in favor.